Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Ninth Circuit. I want to thank the dean and the faculty and staff of the Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law at Arizona State University for making this possible. Thank you all for being here. A couple of housekeeping matters before we proceed to the calendar. First, as you may have noticed, there are only two of us sitting up here today. Judge Miller is participating by telephone from Seattle, and maybe during the question and answer session you can ask him why. But I want to make sure he can hear us. Okay, Judge Miller?
Yes, I'm here. Good morning.
Okay. And he will be asking questions, so when you hear that disembodied voice coming from afar, it is not some deity speaking to you, but merely Judge Miller. We're going to take the cases in the order that they're on the calendar. After we finish the calendar today, we're going to remain on the bench for a question and answer session. Counsel, whoever has the last case, you're not required to remain for it, so we will, if you want to stay, that's fine, but we'll make sure you have time to leave. We have two cases today that have been submitted on the briefs. They're 18-16-468 Rivera versus Town of Patagonia and 18-16-894 Grupo Altex versus Go and Company. And with that, we'll move to our first argued case today, United States versus Gavino Mariscal. Counsel, when you're ready. And counsel, however you're comfortable. So.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, my name is Randolfo Lopez. I am representing Cruz Alonso Gavino Mariscal. Your Honor, in the appeal, I have raised four issues. For the first two are interrelated. It's regarding the indictment and the jury instruction. To that end, the jury instruction did not specifically state what contrary to law had been violated. It simply states that he had made a false statement when he made an application for his passport.
Mr. Lopez, as I understand your argument, so correct me if I'm wrong, it's that the deficiency in this case was not identifying the law or regulation that Mr. Gavino was supposed to have violated. Is that a fair summary?
Yes, Your Honor.
Let me assume for purposes of discussion that you're right, that the indictment and or the instructions should have identified the precise law. How was your client, no objection below, so we have to review for plain error. How was your client prejudiced?
Well, I recognize, Your Honor, that it's, I have a tough road to hoe. I understand that. Again, I'm appointed in the case. I wasn't the trial attorney, so I have to work with what I got, Your Honor.
No blame is being assigned. It's our job to try to review this for plain error.
I understand. But, Your Honor, I think if it was giving more specificity as to the actual statute, it could have allowed trial counsel to be able to articulate a better defense to the indictment itself.
Tell me how. That's why I'm having trouble. Your client and counsel knew throughout that the allegation was that he'd lied about the place of his birth on his passport application. The judge instructed the jury, consistent with the statute or regulation that he was supposed to have violated, and the entire trial was about whether he was telling the truth or not. So I'm trying to figure out how counsel would have defended the case differently had the name of the statute been in the indictment.
Well, Your Honor, a couple of things that occurred during the actual trial itself was that the actual birth certificate from California was submitted into evidence. There, even the agent for the government, when he testified, he stated that California birth certificate was still valid. There was an addendum to the birth certificate that was submitted by the agent who testified, but it was never signed, verified in any way, simply a notice given that particular birth certificate was not valid because they had found a prior birth certificate earlier to that in Mexico.
That's an evidentiary objection. But your objection on appeal seems to be that the case would have been defended differently in some way had the government only put the name of the statute in the indictment and the instructions. And so I'm still trying to figure out that objection that you're now raising is one to the form of the evidence. But well, what would counsel have done differently had he known that the had he had the name of the statute in the indictment?
Well, I think, Your Honor, as I didn't go that far into researching that or getting to it. However, I think that if, for example, had the government argued that perhaps 18 U.S.C. 1001 had been alleged, or even 1028 had been alleged, those two statutes specifically go to the fact that...
No, but just a minute. Those aren't statutes that are covered by the statute that was alleged in the indictment. The statute that was alleged in the indictment, didn't it refer only to regulations promulgated by the State Department?
Well, it says contrary.
In furtherance of that statute?
Yes, Your Honor.
It has nothing to do with the false statement statute. So, getting back to Judge Hurwitz's question, I think part of what he's saying is, I think because it's plain error, you have to show that you were somehow prejudiced by the fact that the government failed to allege in the indictment exactly what regulation, right?
That's correct.
That your client was accused of having violated. Now, first of all, have you figured out what that regulation is yet?
I would think it would be 1001, Your Honor.
1001 is not a regulation, is it?
No, it's a statute, Your Honor.
Well, then if you look at 1542, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
1542 only talks about contrary to the laws regulating the issuance of passports or the rules prescribed pursuant to such laws, right? And the only statute alleged in the indictment, as I recall, is 1542.
That's correct.
So, almost by definition, there's no charge of 1001. So I don't understand why you keep bringing 1001 in. What does that have to do with this case?
Well,
your client
I'm just,
was not charged with 1001.
No, I know it wasn't.
I'm sure he could have been.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Your Honor. Had the indictment simply alleged that not only a 1542, but a contrary to law would have been the statute of 1001 of giving a misstatement or false information when he applied for the passport.
Well, let's go back to the way this trial was conducted, and on both sides, everybody knew that the charge in this case was that your client, in applying for a passport, had misrepresented where he was born. Your client said, no, I didn't. I was, in fact, born in California. The government said, no, you weren't. You were born in Mexico. That was the only issue that was tried. There wasn't any doubt that your client knowingly said on his application that he was born in California. His defense was, I was, and I believed it. And that was tried to the jury. The instructions were consistent with that. So I'm just trying to figure out what difference would it have made had they identified, I think, the reg, which is 22 CFR 51.20. What difference would it have made in the trial or your defense, or your client's defense?
Well, Your Honor, I think that perhaps trial counsel at that particular time could have placed more emphasis in bringing in somebody to establish the validity of the California passport.
But that was entirely what the case was about. I mean, there was all kinds of notice that the government's contention here was that your client wasn't born in California. And so didn't defense counsel know from the beginning that's what I don't know who was a man or a woman below, he or she had to concentrate on?
It was a he or her, but no, I understand the court's position in my reviewing the clerk's record and the entire record. It's I have to find what would be something that has a plausible argument for law, and that is what I could find regarding this particular case. What strikes me more, Your Honor, is that even as I stated earlier, it was even the government's witness who on the stand admitted that the California birth certificate was still valid. So the entire question, this court is correct as to whether the jury to decide which way it would go. And not only that, Your Honor, but the court has indicated that that was the only issue, but the court will recall there was another count that they could not make a decision, which was for illegal entry, a 1326 case, and they couldn't even find that. So obviously the jury was still concerned as to what had occurred, but I think enough for the jury to determine that there was perhaps something there for the passport. Your Honor, I see my time is...
Do you want to save the rest for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, I'm Shelley Clemens with the U.S. Attorney's Office, excuse me, for the District of Arizona. Your Honor, in this particular case, the indictment properly informed the defendant of the charge against him. Therefore, the district court did not plainly err in not sua sponte finding that the indictment was sufficient. The purpose of an indictment is to advise the defendant of the elements of the defense and of the offense and what he needs to defend against, as well as to enable him to plead double jeopardy should he be charged with a similar offense in the future. In this case, while yes, the indictment specifically didn't refer to the particular regulation at issue, 22 CFR 5120, it in fact informed the defendant exactly what he had to defend against.
So why shouldn't the indictment, this is a strange crime. The crime says it's a crime to violate another law or regulations, basically. Mm-hmm. Why shouldn't the indictment make reference to the other law or regulation that the person is charged with violating?
For two reasons. First of all, because the indictment told the defendant exactly what it was he had to defend against. That is, that he falsely claimed to have been born in Calexico, California, when in fact he had been born in Mexico. And also because in this particular case, the particular CFR issue requires that the passport applicant truthfully answer all questions. And in fact, when the defendant signed the passport application, he averred, he
when
declared...
When you say all questions, where is that requirement set forth in the law? Is that in the statute?
That's in 21 CFR 5120B.
It's in the,
yes,
all right,
it's in the regulation.
All right, that goes to Judge Horace's point. That's in the regulation, so why can't you point out to the defendant that, you know, in accordance with the statute, this is a regulation that you violated?
Well, we certainly could, Your Honor.
I mean, first of all, is that your position that that's a regulation that the indictment's referring to?
Yes.
So what's the government's interest in not identifying the regulation in the indictment? Put aside whether there was plain error in this case. I mean, you're asking us, I'm not sure we need to go there, to adopt a rule that gives defendants less notice than you might when you know at the time you're charging them precisely what regulation you think they violated. Why in the world would we adopt that rule?
I don't know that this court necessarily would adopt that particular rule.
Well,
however,
that's what your brief says.
Well,
your brief says we don't have to tell them what reg or statute. And
I
have trouble with that.
We don't, because the indictment informed the defendant exactly what he had to defend against, and that is that he falsely claimed to have been born in one country when he was born in the other. That is actually more specific than telling him he violated 5120, because then he'd have to figure out exactly what the falsity was that the government was claiming.
Well, but it's not enough to violate this statute that one knowingly make any false statement in an application for a passport, et cetera, et cetera. That statement must be contrary to the laws regulating the issuance of passports or the rules prescribed pursuant to such laws. And so it does seem to me that counsel has a point here, that one of the elements of this offense is not only the false statement, but that the false statement violate a specific law or regulation governing passports. So I ask again, why shouldn't you tell them what law or regulation they have violated? It's an element of this offense.
By the way, are there any other regulations that might apply that you know of?
I am not aware of any others. I know on the warning for a passport application, it talks about other laws you could violate if you in fact make false statements, including 18 U.S.C.
But that's not a that's,
but
not,
that's
a law,
not the regulation.
That's not a law regulating the issuance of passports.
That's
maybe
correct.
at least limited to the regulation of passports.
Let me ask this. Maybe it's just a grammatical question, but the statute 1542 refers to laws, right, regulating the issuance of
yes.
passports or the rules prescribed pursuant to such laws, right? But the indictment says laws regulating the issuance of such passports and the rules prescribed pursuant to such laws. Now, I assume that substituting the and for the or was intentional, and it seems to me if you did that, you take on the burden of not only including the statute, but the rules prescribed pursuant to the law. Isn't that the effect of substituting and for or there?
That would normally be the effect, Your Honor. But in this particular case, the indictment, under the plain error standard, this court is to liberally construe this indictment in favor of validity.
What does that mean? We should substitute or for and?
No, Your Honor. And
what do you mean by liberally construe it? I mean, and is and, isn't it?
Yes,
Your Honor. I know there are cases that say sometimes and means or.
Yes, but in this particular case, in liberally construing the statute, the court is to liberally construe it to determine whether or not the defendant has been adequately advised of the charges.
So what law regulating the issuance of such passports did Mr. Galvino violate?
22 CFR 5120, which requires that he truthfully answer all questions.
That's the CFR?
Yes.
That's the reg?
That's the reg.
You said laws and regs. So is there a separate law that he violated?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. Technically, he could have violated 1008 by obstructing.
But of course, the jury was never instructed on those things.
No, they were not, Your Honor. But in this circuit, this court has found more than once that the government doesn't have to prove the contrary to law. What the government has to prove is that the defendant willingly and knowingly made a false statement in the application for passport with the intent to secure one for his own use. The defendant has not cited, and I've been unable to find any case law where the court has held that the contrary to law provision is necessary and required.
So let's assume for a second that there was no CFR.
Okay.
Could Mr. Galvino have been convicted in this case?
If there's no CFR, the government would again, we would have to look to the case law to figure out what it is the false.
And would you have to tell him, would you have to tell him which law you thought he was violated?
Well, what we told him was exactly what the false
statement
was. No, I understand.
And that's because there was a CFR, and that's yes. probably why there's no plain error in this case. I'm asking, what if there were no CFR, and you found some other law that you thought he had violated by his false passport application? Would you have to identify that law to him?
Not necessarily, so long as we notified him, as we did in this indictment, exactly what the facts were that constituted the element of the offense, in this case, that he
so
falsely.
Your view is it would suffice to allege the elements of that offense without identifying the offense itself?
Yes, and I would cite, Your Honor, to U.S. versus Normando, which is a drug case where the government, again, didn't cite the specific statute that importing marijuana was contrary to, but because they told the defendant he had illegally ported marijuana, the court held that sufficiently advised him of the charges and did not prejudice him in any way.
So do you agree that we don't need to reach the issue of whether or not it was error in this case, but only whether it was plain error?
Yes, that is correct. But there
so
is
on the issue of plain error, why wasn't it prejudicial?
It was not prejudicial. Well, first of all, it's not even plain error because there's ample case law saying that's not a required element. But the defendant cannot show it substantially affected his rights because he had notice of exactly what the falsity was that the government was going to prove at trial, and he had the ability to defend against that. As this court has noted, at trial, his defense was not that this particular false statement would not be contrary to law, and in fact, I can think of no way to make a plausible argument that it wasn't. But in fact, his argument solely was that he believed he was a U.S. citizen and that U.S. birth certificate was valid, and therefore he did not lie when he put down on the birth certificate. defense counsel noted that there was that valid birth certificate entered. However, the fact that there is a valid birth certificate, while that is a prima facie evidence of the information contained on the birth certificate, it is non-conclusive and it's a rebuttal presumption. And in this particular case, going to both the jury instructions and the sufficiency of the evidence argument, the government proved more than adequately that there was ample evidence that the defendant knew that he had been born in Mexico when in fact he put a different statement down on the birth certificate. And I would note, for instance, at the trial, the defendant testified that numerous times over his life he has claimed to have been born in Mexico, and that according to him, he says he's been born in Mexico when it suits his purposes, and he says he's been born in the U.S. when it suits his purposes. Combined with all the other evidence that the government presented, including certificates signed by the defendant saying he'd been born in Nogales, Sonora, Mexico, the jury was free to believe that he knowingly and intentionally falsified his place of birth on the application. The government would submit and ask you to affirm the conviction. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Thank you. Mr. Lopez, I think you have about a minute and a half.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor,
answer this maybe one more time. Why was the failure to specify some regulation, why was it prejudicial or harmful to the defense?
Well, as I stated
earlier, what could you have done differently, or how would it have changed the course of the trial?
Well, Your Honor, if I had been handling the case at that time from the trial court level, I think I would have had at least an official from the California Department of Records to come and testify that that particular California birth certificate was valid.
But that's
well, that's an
you may be a better lawyer than the trial lawyer. I mean, and you seem to be a very good lawyer, so I suspect you are. But that's not really an answer to why the absence of notice prejudiced him. It's an answer about why the lawyer didn't do a good enough job.
That's an entirely separate point. I mean, point is, you know, if you knew about what regulation is being charged, how would you defend the case differently?
Well, I didn't really go into that in my thought process, Your Honor. But I believe that there are a myriad of ways that the defense counsel at that time could have attacked the government's position. Excuse me. The defendant himself stated, and I agree that he had stated numerous times that he had been born in Mexico, but he did it for convenience reasons rather than to state that he was actually born there. He did it because he didn't want any problems with the Mexican government, and that's why he did it. But he also had, and since 1992, had his birth certificate from California. So, and he had used it for over 20 years or so crossing. So the thing is, to him, he understood, and his state of mind was that he was a U.S. citizen.
Thank you, Mr. Lopez. You've run over time.
Yes.
We understand both sides' arguments. I want to thank both sides for their helpful briefing and arguments in this case, and this case will be submitted.
May I be excused, Your Honor? May I be excused?
You may, yes. Mr. Lopez.
Thank you.
With our thanks.